Well, good afternoon. I am privileged to get to be here with you. And I mean that. I wish I could be here all week, but we'll actually just be here tonight and tomorrow morning, and then we'll be leaving tomorrow noontime sometime. I'm not sure when, but so we can get home yet. But I am thankful I get to be here with you, at least for a couple days. Some of the reason is for me. You know, I was sitting there and I thought, I remember, it wasn't very long ago, I sat where you're sitting, and you tend to think the one standing up here is supposed to be some spiritual giant. You're wrong. I'm glad to have a couple of days to remind myself of some things. Some things I'm going to remind you of, but I'm reminding me. So I'm glad I get to do that. I was given a couple topics. I think you have here preparation for the future at the 2:30 slot. And Brother Allen asked me to share a couple of different topics. And today was on, and I don't know if you knew this or not, Brother Eden, maybe you did, but on eternity. It's a topic I really, really like, because it has affected me and my life. And I'm going to try to somehow share a little bit with you and see if I can't present it to you in a way that has affected my life in light of preparing for the future in the light of eternity. There's the title if you want that. Preparations for the future is the title of this slot here. And so today it's preparing for the future in the light of eternity. We people don't, you know, we look around and we can say there's a lot of change in people and in the world, but in some ways, we actually don't change very much. I'm still a lot who I was when I sat here at 17 years old. I see that in myself. I'm actually not a whole lot different than I was sitting at a Bible school, picturing myself 17, 18, 19, 20. And I look at myself today, and I actually look at my wife every now and then and tell her, I still sometimes live off of things God did back then. I'm still influenced by that. And you all don't realize how much you are charting the course for who you will be when you're 40. Right now. Right now. God changes things, and I'm so thankful. He takes people from the gutters, flips them around, and makes godly people out of them. He does that. But a lot of us, we are just an expanded version of a 20-year-old. And there's some truth in that, brothers. I realize He changes us, but I sense that in myself a lot. I'm just a little bit older version of some of where I was at your age. You're charting and setting some habits. Think of that and take that with both hands and realize the blessing in that, or the curse that can be, but the blessing that can be as you chart some courses. So if you're sitting here and there's an inner hunger and you're sitting on the edge of your seats in your heart, if you're not doing it literally, but you have an edge of the seat heart and you're saying, Brother Eden, I want wisdom. You know what you'll probably be when you're 40? Someone sitting on the edge of their seats in their hearts saying, I want wisdom. And you know what? You'll have a little more. When you get there, you'll realize you don't have much. But you'll have a little more. But if you find yourself sitting there thinking, okay, we'll see how long this fellow goes on. And not because of me, I'm just saying whether you're on the edge of your seats. And I don't mean just when I'm sharing. But if it's more of a, you know, whatever. I don't know how to paint a nonchalant attitude. You know what? It's very likely when you're 40, you have a little bit of that same nonchalant attitude. Again, I'm not trying to take down what God can do and revolutionize us. And yet, you are forming habits, norms in your life. So you, as you sit here today, and as you make choices, are preparing for the future. I haven't started on my message, sorry. You're preparing for your future in the small little choices you make, in the intensity with which you seek after wisdom, in the earnestness, in the people you connect with, in the hungers that you have. Anyway, go for it. I'm excited to be here with you, and I know and am delighted. There are a lot of hungry hearts here. Thank you. Bless you. I am so thankful. Preparing for the future in the light of eternity. I want us to turn to Revelation chapter 1 first off. Want to try to paint a little picture as you think, as a bit of a foundation of preparing for your future. There's two ways we could look at this, and today we're going to look at kind of both of them. The one is you're preparing as young people for your future as adults in the future. You're preparing for, here you are, most of you probably between 16 and, what, if I say 22, do I catch most of you? I'm sure there's some of you older than that probably, but... And you're saying, all right, from the age of 22, excuse me, or 20 or whatever you're going to say, till 70, 70. And in some senses, you feel like you're preparing for that future. And you are. And that's what I just said a little bit ago. You're charting courses, creating habits that will carry on with you the rest of your life. So in that sense, we can look at preparing for the future. We can also look at it in preparing for the future. Know what I mean? Eternity. So as you ponder today and the rest of the days in light of this concept of preparation for the future, excuse me, remember it in both these ways. Sure, you're preparing for an adult life of service to the King of Kings. You're also preparing for an eternity with the King of Kings. And we're not going to dig into that a whole lot, but I think if he says lay up treasures, that means according to what we are here, there's going to be something accordingly. And you're preparing for that future. Revelation chapter 1, the Apostle John is just beginning to write out the book here. And he says, I, John, in chapter 1, verse 9, who also am your brother and companion in tribulation. Thank you, John. Here's a spiritual giant and he's talking to us. I'm your companion in tribulation and your brother. And I'm glad I have such good companionship. In the kingdom and patience of Jesus Christ, we're going to be in tribulation and there must be patience in this kingdom of Jesus Christ. Patient continuance. Or my cliche I like to use, holy plodding. We like when we're running and there's energy and we're all out. But there's a lot of times in life we need to learn what it's like when it's hard to just put one foot in front of the other. The emotions may not be there. Life's a little difficult. There's a problem here. There's a difficulty there. And we say, I'm not stopping. I'm just putting one foot in front of the other. And I'm going to do right no matter what I feel like. I'm going to do right. That's what I call holy plodding or patience. In this kingdom, we need a lot of patience. Holy, patient continuance. I, John, was in the isle that is called Patmos for the word of God and for the testimony of Jesus Christ. Thank you, brother. I was on an island, set apart, set away from where I wanted to be, in prison, so to speak, verse 10, and I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day and heard behind me a great voice as of a trumpet. Here he is on an island, alone, not with the people of God at any rate, in freedom, in captivity, so to speak. And he's on this isle, but he wasn't downhearted. And it seems like right now, it wasn't even just plotting for him. If you were in the Spirit, and I'm not going to define that now, I'm not going to take the time to do that, but on the Lord's day, in the Spirit, and you heard a great voice behind you as a trumpet, and I don't know what a trumpet sounds like in a voice, but it was clear, loud, strong, saying, we could go on, I am Alpha and Omega. Now jump to chapter 4, verse 1. He was given some instructions. We know the instructions he was given to the seven churches. And this is right after those instructions to the seven churches. After this, in chapter 4, verse 1, after this, I looked and behold, a door was opened in heaven. Have you ever seen a door opened and you got a glimpse into heaven? I haven't. But what if on the way here, every one of us were driving down the highway or the road or whatever you were doing, and maybe there was a group of, some of you came in a group of 12 in a van, and some of you might have been one or two or four or five, and you're driving down the road and you're headed to Bible school at Bern, and all of a sudden, up ahead, the clouds and the sky goes whoosh, and you got a peek into the throne room of God. That's what John got. He got a peek into eternity, the eternal one. And the first voice which I heard was as it were a trumpet talking to me, and he said, come up hither, and I'll show thee things which must be hereafter. John was in the Isle of Patmos, but what if each one of us, I don't know. God wants us to walk by faith. So I don't think this will happen to us. But if I could have gotten that glimpse, and you could have gotten that glimpse on your way here, how do you think we all would have communicated? Brother, do you know what I saw? I think we would have walked in here, maybe with some fear on our hearts. Do you know what I saw? The heavens opened. And as I looked, I saw and I beheld, as John says, a throne was in heaven. One that sat upon the throne. And we tried to express what we saw as we saw a glimpse into the eternal. And the veil of the physical was pulled from our eyes and we could see it. Do you think that would affect our lives? Do you? I do. I think it would affect our lives. It would affect your goals as young people. It would affect what you really want. It would affect your everyday, daily choices. If you looked up and the heavens parted and you saw the God of the universe sitting on the throne, I think it would revolutionize us. I want to have that kind of a concept as I go through my life. He's on the throne in all that splendor and in all that glory, even though you don't see it right now. That's the way it is. I remember thinking of that. We went on a hike. I think it was with as a family. And as when I was a boy, and we hiked up a mountain, you wiggled and squirmed and you hiked, I think it was a couple miles, it wasn't real far, but a little distance, and it was up, and we come to this beautiful waterfall. Now, it wasn't a Niagara-style waterfall, but it was a beautiful mountain waterfall. And it was enough that as the water came coursing over the edge and plunging into the deep and made a roaring sound, it was beautiful to behold. And there it is, just roaring. And it's beautiful as the water comes over the edge, plunges into the depths, and there's this sound. We left. But I remember thinking this morning when I got out of bed, that waterfall was doing that and I didn't think about it. Now I'm leaving the waterfall and it's going to keep doing it. Excuse me. I'm going to go about my day and it's going to keep doing it. And you know what? I haven't thought about it today but it's probably doing it right now. And it doesn't really affect me because I forgot about it. This God, who's seated upon His throne, high and lifted up, He's there, even though we don't see it with these eyes. And for you and I to live by faith is saying, I'm going to live in the light of that eternal God and eternity, and I'm going to make my decisions gazing up through that doorway, looking through that doorway by faith, and make decisions as if it really happened to me. That will affect your future. And it'll ultimately make you, and I'm not trying to be all inclusive, this is one portion of the word and one aspect, but this will make us purposeful followers of Jesus. That's what I want you to be able to do as you process preparing for your future and thinking of your future. The next 60-year future, if you get that many more years, and the next gazillion-year future. You don't measure eternity by time, so I don't know how else to say it. We're preparing by the choices we make, the daily things we do, the concepts we have. And it's not hard to get busy and only look at the things that can be seen and not see beyond the veil of the earthly into the eternal. It's easy to do that. And that's one of the reasons I'm glad I get to share this with you. It's a principle that I love deeply, that has affected me, and I just love to share it again. Life in the light of the eternal, or of eternity. And now, as we by faith gaze through this doorway, that's when we can start making better decisions. Because then, as the song says, things of earth, they don't look as glamorous. They just aren't so important. Well, how does it go? Things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace. And that's what I want us to remember. People who walk by faith, make decisions by faith, keep the eternal in the back of their mind, if not in the front at times. And I'm trying to bring it to the front. But it'll move more towards the back. I had a very busy fall this past fall. Work was very busy. In lawn care and tree work, there's things pile up in the fall before winter comes. And also selling stoves, that piles up in the fall before winter comes. Because everyone wants to get their heat in and get their stove going before winter comes. And so, being in those two fields, my fall was kind of intense for me. I didn't keep track of my hours a few of the weeks. And maybe I'm glad I didn't. But I kept telling my wife, I don't want to live like this. And she kept reminding me, it's just for a season. And she's right. So I pulled through the season. But in the busyness of all these things, many times that door is closed. And we just live life with the door into heaven that John saw. I want to open it up for us again and remind us, live by faith. Seeing that which is not seen. Go to Hebrews. A couple verses, Hebrews 11. We know this by faith concept. So sorry about my cough here. It's just been lingering for a couple weeks. Hebrews chapter 11. We know this Moses in verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Moses, you don't make sense. All of Egypt probably would have said to him, Moses, you're crazy. It doesn't make sense, Moses. Look what you could have had. All of Egypt, the treasures of Egypt, anything you would have wanted, basically the power of everything was just right at your fingertips, anything you wanted. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. You could have been something, Moses, and had it all. But Moses, and I don't know, we see Moses wrestling. We know the story of Moses. I'm going to paint the picture as if he saw it all from the beginning. I think in the end he saw this way. I don't know how much he saw in the beginning, but I'm going to paint it this way. Moses could have looked back at some of those Egyptians and saying, "You're missing it. You're looking right here. I'm looking right there." And all of a sudden, it makes sense. From an Egyptian standpoint, Moses, this is ridiculous. You're going to run out to a desert, live in a desert, watch some sheep, marry a lady who has nothing. She has to watch sheep to stay alive compared to Egypt. You could have had anything, done anything you wanted. Most of the day, you probably were free to just fulfill your desires. It's all there. It's not just a business that makes $1 million. It's more than that. It's not just the ultimate of anything nice and comfortable and sweet and cute and pretty. And it's everything. And Moses said, "You're missing it. I'm looking there. You're looking here. You have blinders on," he could have said. "And with your blinders on, you're right. But I'm going to esteem the reproach of Christ greater riches than treasures in Egypt." Why, Moses? "Because I see beyond the earthly." Right? I see far beyond. And now, as we look at Moses and we realize, oh, yeah, Moses, that makes sense. But to the normal onlooker who only sees the present, as I hold my hands in front of my eyes and you only see right there, Moses said, "No, by faith, I see much, much further." Young people, that helps me. As I have to make a decision, and we start to feel like these decisions that we need to make are hard. It's a reproach. It's difficult. Maybe some of you young men need to make a decision. "No, I don't think I want to put that much energy into that job. I don't want whatever it is." Sure, that might make more money. That might be a more prestigious job title. But no, I don't think I will. And someone looking on may say, "You're crazy." Yeah. I have a different set of lenses than you do. And when you take off the blinders, all of a sudden, lay down a silly little job. Sure! That's a piece of cake. Oh, so discipline myself and not, and whatever it is, you put it in there, whatever it is that your tendency is to want in this life. I'm not going to list them all. I'm going to talk about some more things maybe tomorrow practically. But you stick it in there, whatever you're wrestling with. Young people, you look at life, and life is in front of you. A lot. That's the way you see it. My father, just a couple months ago, had open heart surgery. They cut his chest open. Sorry, I mean, it sounds gruesome, but it is. They just chop his bone right down here and open it up and hold wedges in there and go in with their hands and start working on your heart. And him going through that has been good for me. I'm only 40. But the realization of my father being the oldest generation, and there's lots of people older than him, but taking a generation perspective and realizing he's having those kind of difficulties, that's been good. Oh, yeah. He's getting more weary. My father's always been very strong. He work as hard and run as fast and all that as me, basically. All of a sudden, just overnight, he can't. I think it's made him realize it, too. And he's realized it more than that. But as I've pondered, oh, life really isn't very long. You all don't think about that very much. Life looks long and in front of you. And that's okay. But take the tendency is that these things right here are very important to you. I know. It's my tendency, too. But especially as young people, these things that are right in front of you tend to be very important. Things and stuff and feelings and others' thoughts and all these things that are just right here and very, very tangible. But if you can do like Moses and say, "Mr. Egyptian, you don't see very far. I'm looking beyond," and you pull back the veil and you get a glimpse into the eternal. all of the sudden dying to whatever your father, your mother, your church, your whatever is saying is so puny compared to the results. Do you see what I'm saying? I love this picture. Go through life realizing I'm making decisions in the present, preparing for my future. Seeing, let's see, I didn't even get to that, did I? By faith, Moses, verse 27, forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Moses, the king, is after you. This Pharaoh, the most powerful man on the planet, it seems, as we study history a little bit, he's after you to take your life now. And Moses said, it's okay. It's okay. I'll forsake that. Not fearing the wrath of that king, but rather seeing him who is invisible. And that's faith. Seeing him who is invisible. By faith, looking up beyond the clouds and the material, and by faith realizing, yes, my Father's there. He's sitting on his throne in all of his splendor that Isaiah saw, and that John saw, and that Ezekiel saw. In all those glorious pictures where they tried to use flowery words to say what they saw, and we can barely grasp them because I think they could barely know how to use words to describe in all of his splendor, and he's there, and he's watching. Are you preparing for your future, seeing him who is invisible, or seeing that which is seen? You'll get very different results in the future, right? I think we can all agree with that. And I'm just trying to lift up the beauty, the excitement, the true fulfillment of pulling back the curtains and seeing far beyond what some of your neighbors see. And it gives excitement to life. It gives a vision for what I'm doing. It takes the hard things and I have grace to press through. When we see him who is invisible. 2 Corinthians 4. Another one of a favorite verses of mine. I think we have it in our living room, on our living room wall, and I think I have it in front of my desk in my office. Here's the Apostle Paul, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, in verse 10, 11, 12, he's saying all the difficulties he went through, the things he died to. Verse 16, for which cause we faint not. Even though we go through all these difficulties, we faint not. We are not giving up. But though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. Though the seeable man is struggling and has difficulties, the unseeable man is strengthened and is encouraged and goes forward. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment. You know the list of Paul's light afflictions, right? You call that light afflictions? I might think I was something if I'd have been through all that and still standing strong. My, I've been a faithful soldier, right? Paul says, light afflictions. Why, Paul? Because, I can almost hear Paul say, because I'm not looking here. I'm looking here. Right? Far beyond. And this here becomes strangely dim. Even when my back is in shreds, even when I've been in the deep, in the ocean, thinking I'm going to drown, it's okay. I look far beyond. Even when I can't have a comfortable house, even when I lay on the ground to sleep at night, even when I... It's okay. I see him who is invisible, and it is a light affliction, and it's just for a moment. 1,000 years is as a day, and a day is 1,000 years. That means a 1,000 years is a day. Break that down, and so we have 1 minute. I don't know how many milliseconds that would be, but it's not very much. God's economy, God's perspective from eternity is quite different. This light affliction, which is but for a moment, it's working for me a far exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we look not at the things which are seen, Paul says, I don't look here. I don't. I look here. I don't look at what is right in front of me that I deal with on a day-to-day basis. Those things are but passing and light. But if the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. I am going to put up here just quickly, and let me just do this real quick here. I should have some of you who are an artist do this better for me, but you'll bear with me here. You know what that is? Everybody know what that is? Scales, right? In a lot of places in the world, they still use these scales. Over here, you put a one pound hunk of steel, if you're buying 1 pound. We bought 1 kilo, a kilogram. So they'd put a kilogram hunk of steel there, and then they would start over here, start pouring in the wheat or the rice or whatever you're buying until it comes down and it's even. So as we look at this scales, which side is heavier, right or left? Someone say it. Right. This side's heavy because it's sagging down. Over here, we have this, I'm going to write light, if you can't see it, I'm sorry. Light affliction. Okay? That's light. It's going up. That's light affliction. Over here, Paul calls it the heavy side, eternal glory. This over here, this light affliction, this is what is, seen. This over here, he says this is what is unseen. And I'm just, sometimes I like pictures to help me understand, and I think this is what Paul's saying. This over here, this is temporal. Right here, that's temporal. This right here, Paul says, this is eternal. That's the picture I get out of these verses. And so the Apostle Paul says, do you know what I'm living by? I'm living by what's unseen because it's heavy. It's worth something. I'm not living by what is seen. That's light. It's not worth a whole lot. This unseen, it has eternal glory and weight to it. These light afflictions, they don't have, they're light, he says. They're light. The unseen eternal glory, that's eternal. That's beyond the veil. That's what John saw. And these temporal things or difficulties or the things that are seen, they're light. They're not heavy. Let's remember that now as you go into life making decisions and preparing for your future, adulthood and eternal future. What's heavy? What's worth something? I want you to do this for yourself, but I'm going to just throw out a couple of examples, real, real simple ones. I'm a father, and so my child, and maybe some of you could picture it as a sibling, my child, all of a sudden I hear a holler from the bathroom or somewhere, and they need help. I'm here, and I hear it, and my wife's here, and she hears it. Who's going to get up? Just a simple, dumb little illustration, but I understand this. Who's going to get up and help her? Do I hope she heard and I'll just stay busy a little bit longer hoping she hears and goes and does it so I don't have to? Or do I say, you know what, I'm going to get up and I'm willing to serve and bless someone else? If I look at the scene, what I can see, what I feel, which am I going to do? Will I go help? Probably not. I'm seated. I'm doing something else. It'll bother me. It'll interrupt what I'm doing. Whatever. I don't feel like it. I'm tired. Whatever the things are. But if I look at the unseen, Jesus says, if you do it unto these little ones, I'm going to use it as a child in this instance, you do it as unto me. Oh, so if I pull back the curtain and I look at it from an unseen perspective, not my personal feelings, I'll be happy to get up and serve. And I'm not going to just be all proud of myself because I was quite the servant either. I'm going to be faithful. I want to see what's unseen. Because if I get proud about it, I just cut the throat on any of the blessing coming back to me. Because I already got it. I was quite something. All of life. Big decisions, little decisions. Am I going to buy this car or this truck or not? All right. Put it on the scales. Put it on the eternal scales. What's going to be best as you're gazing at the throne of glory? Standing before the Creator of the universe. A few 6,000 years is all behind you. And you're gazing at Him. What's going to matter? Now, which vehicle are you going to buy? Look at it through those eyes. Make decisions for your future in the light of the eternal. There's some guidelines Dad, Mom, Church gave you. How close do I ride to the lines? Just put it on the eternal scales. Put it on the eternal scales. Now what do you do? Do you see what I'm saying? Pull back the curtain and look at the glory of the One that we will stand before someday, as you mentioned, Brother Aiden. And we'll stand before. Put it on those scales as we see beyond the present. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Not treasures on earth, but treasures in heaven. Matthew 6. Lay them up and realize I'm making decisions that will affect eternity. And I'm sending treasures on before, not necessarily what I'm doing right here. I would like to share an illustration with you in 1 Samuel. Sorry, I am just grabbing a few things here, trying to give us a glimpse behind the scene. As I mentioned, it's a topic that I love to share on. First Samuel, we're going to go to chapter 16. We'll see how fast we can go through this. 1 Samuel chapter 16, and the Lord said unto Samuel, how long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Excuse me. Samuel, how long are you going to keep mourning for Saul? Fill thine horn with oil and go, I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons. And Samuel said, God, how can I go? God, if Saul hears, he'll kill me. And the Lord said, Samuel, take a heifer with you and say, I'm come to sacrifice to the Lord. God, if I go and I say, okay, here's the king of Israel, do you think Saul's going to be happy about that? Mm-mm. And God, I'll lose my head. Okay, God says, take a heifer with you, a sacrifice, and call Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show thee what thou shalt do, and thou shalt anoint unto me him whom I name unto thee. Samuel did that which the Lord spake and came to Bethlehem, and the elders of the town trembled at his coming and said, comest thou peaceably? Here comes Samuel, the man of God, and he's coming to our town. And they trembled. Why? I think they'd had some past experience. This man was in touch with something beyond the natural and the physical. Right? With the eternal. And here he comes. Oh, Samuel, what's going on? And he said, peaceably. I'm come to sacrifice unto the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice. And he sanctified Jesse and his sons and called them to the sacrifice. And it came to pass when they were come that he looked on Eliab, one of Jesse's sons, and said, surely the Lord's anointed is with him. Oh, here he comes. And he's quite the strapping young fella. That must be the one. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance, Samuel. Samuel, you're looking like this. Look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. The Lord seeth not as man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. Samuel, I know the heart of this man. Even though he looks nice, I know the heart of this man, and you don't want him. I don't want him. God says, I see beyond this. And we, as followers of God, need to learn to see beyond this. Right? God, how do you see it? Then Jesse called Abinadab, made him pass before Samuel, and he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. And Jesse made Shema to pass by, and he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. And again, Jesse made seven of his sons to pass before Samuel. And Samuel said unto Jesse, the Lord hath not chosen these. And Samuel said unto Jesse, are here all thy children? Do you have any more, Jesse? God said, none of these, but he told me one of your sons. What's going on? Samuel said unto Jesse, well, he said, there remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. There's one more little fella, and he's out there with the sheep. When Jesse looked at his sons, he didn't even hardly, I guess, didn't seem like it was even worth bringing David in. There's one more little fella, and he's out with the sheep. Samuel said unto Jesse, send and fetch him. God has said no here. Send and fetch him. For we will not sit down till he come hither. And he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy, and withal of a beautiful countenance, and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Samuel, I'm looking at this young man, and I see something in this young man that I didn't see in these others. And I want him. Yes, Lord. So he anoints him. Took a horn of oil, anointed him in the midst of his brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. God says, he's the one. Samuel arose, went to Ramah. But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. Something's happening. Something beyond the surface just happened. There was an anointing. And the Spirit of the Lord came on David. And what happened to Saul? He had an evil spirit coming and bothering him. And it seems to me it coincides. When the Spirit of God came on David, it seems like Saul lost something even more. Was it outward? It was behind the scenes stuff. Right? It was God at work. And the Spirit of the Lord changing. And Saul's servant said unto him, behold, now an evil spirit from God troubleth thee. Let's bring someone in. And Saul said to his servants, verse 17, provide me now a man that can play well and bring him to me. And he answered one of his servants and said, behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite. Listen, here's this little fella that was out with the sheep. I've seen him cunning and playing, a mighty, valiant man, and a man of war. And I don't quite get that. Because just in the next chapter, he wasn't allowed to go to war because he was too young. But there was something about David that made people say, a man of war, valiant. I think there was a man who saw beyond just the surface. And he had a connection with the God of the universe beyond just the surface. And they said, he's prudent in matters and comely person, and the Lord is with him. Wouldn't that be enough? If on your tombstone, on my tombstone, it said, the Lord was with him. May it be so. Wherefore Saul sent messengers unto Jesse, send me David, thy son, which is with the sheep. That little fella, out with the sheep, send him to me. David came to Saul, stood before him, and he loved him. Let's go on. So Saul, the end of 16, so Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed. Why? Because of David. Not because of Saul, but because of David. Chapter 17. We know this story, but now with this background of David, we have this story. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shokah, which belonged to Judah, and pitched between Shokah and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched on the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side. And there was a valley between them and there came out a champion. So just picture with me here. You have a valley and there's a mountain over here and a mountain over here. And we have the Israelites over here on this mountain and we have the Philistines over here on this mountain. And they're preparing to fight.
But in the morning, rather than the whole army coming down and this army coming down and there being a battle, something else happened. There went out a champion out of the camp, and the Philistine named Goliath of Gath was height was 6 cubits and a span. That's probably more than 9 feet. That's a big fella. I know there's a couple of you big fellows back here, but you're not very big compared to him. I think my hand is about 7 feet right there. So more than 2 feet more than that. He came out and he said, 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of brass on his head and he was armed with a coat of mail and the weight was approximately, and I don't know how, sometimes these calculations are hard, but from what I can figure out, it could have been around 150 pounds. For me to carry 150 pounds, that's hard work. For him, that was his weight of his clothes. Now let's go and fight. 2 80-pound bags of concrete for some of you, right? 1 80-pound bag is work. Put one on this shoulder, one on this shoulder, and now start wrestling a fella. Mm-mm. This was a big fella. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs and a target of brass between his shoulders, and the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his beam and the spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. That could have been 18 pounds. You all have swung an 8-pound sledgehammer. Some of you young men probably, right? There's fives, there's eights. I think eight's pretty common. Ten's getting big. 18. And try to maneuver that thing around. By the way, do you know what we're doing? What are we looking at right here? This, right? The scene. That's what we're looking at. Okay, but keep looking at it. 2 feet higher than the top of my hand at least, probably more. He could walk and be agile with 150 pounds on, pick up more than 2 sledgehammers with one hand and say, okay, let's go, wave it around. I know we're looking at this, but that's what God paints here. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you and let him come down to me. Here I am. The Philistines were over here. The Israelites were over here. And he came down off this mountain and he started hollering up on this mountain where the Israelites stood and says, come on, who are you anyway? You servants of Saul, choose you a man. Let him come down to me. And if he be able to fight with me and kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistines said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight. And what did the Israelites see? This or this? Thank you. They saw this. That fella? Me? Fight him? No way. I'd be like, I don't know. I have my youngest is, five, I think. 4 or 5. I think she just had a birthday, turned 5. That's why. You know, I pick her up and hold her, and she likes it if I tickle her and half hold her upside down, and that's just wonderful, and we play, and I think it might have been a little like that with this Goliath. Yeah, come on down. Sure, I'll pick you up by your leg and look at you, and put you back down, and that's the kind of fella it seems like he was. These Israelites, when Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons. And a man went among men for old men in the days of Saul, and the 3 eldest sons of Jesse, they were over here on this mountainside, and they followed Saul to battle. And the names of the 3 sons of the battle were Eliab, Abinadab, and Shema. And David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep in Bethlehem. Remember, this anointed one, he was okay to go back and feed sheep. Someone who's only looking at the present might not like that. Do you know what I mean? Have you ever been told to go feed sheep and you thought, I've been told to go feed sheep. Sometimes I didn't like it. You mean, go do that? That's all I can do? That's all I'm worth? That's all whatever? Just go feed sheep, Mickey. If you're looking here, it might be discouraging. If you're looking here, it'll be okay. Do you see the difference in seeing the eternal or not? Okay, these men fled. Now we're going to jump to David. David was the youngest of the three eldest followed Saul, but David went and returned, there we have, verse 15, from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. I don't know why they just kept on going 40 days. I'm not sure. Jesse said unto David his son, now take now for thy brethren an ephah of parched corn, these 10 loaves, run to the camp to thy brethren, carry these 10 cheeses unto the captive of their thousand. Look how thy brethren fare and take their pledge. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel, verse 19, were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with the keeper. All right, now he's leaving his sheep. He has another job to do. Came to the trench, and the host was going forth to fight, and shouted for the battle, for Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. Over here on this side were the Israelites, and over here were the Philistines, and they put the battle in array, and they were getting ready to fight. And David led his carriage in the hand of the keeper, the things that he had brought, and ran to the army, and came and saluted his brethren, and he talked with them. And behold, as David stood there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words. And David heard them. I defy the armies of Israel, Goliath said. And all the men of Israel, when they saw this man, day 40 or 41, turned around and fled from him and were sore afraid. Here's David, and he watched it. Watched the men of Israel. He watched the Philistines. He looked down at Goliath. Have you seen this man that has come up surely to defy Israel as he come up? And it shall be that the man, they're telling David this, who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. Do you know what Saul was doing? He was trying to create two weights. And the one weight was facing a fella who could probably pick you up and hold you upside down and take a peek at you. And Saul was trying to pile enough weight over here on the other side and say, listen, you don't have to pay taxes. You can have one of my daughters. You can. And he lists all these things and he's trying to pile the weight to make this light affliction not be quite so heavy. And everyone looked at that and they watched and they turned around and ran. And they said, nope, it's not worth it. The people answered after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. Oh, I'm sorry. Verse 26, I jumped over. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine anyway? This little 9-foot fella that walks around with 150 pounds and a spear of maybe 18 pounds and is willing to just walk around, has no problem with this kind of thing and could probably pick. Who is this fella? What, David? What are you saying? Yeah, David says, who is this fella that should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, the eldest man, and we see his eldest brother heard when he spake unto him, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why camest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? David, go back to where you belong with the sheep. I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mayest see the battle. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner. And the people answered him again after the former. When the words were heard which David spake, he rehearsed them. They were rehearsed before Saul. And he sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. David, you'll do what? Look at this, young people. Here are two different perspectives. The one is the 9-foot man standing there with all of his armor and his big spear. And that's what you see. The other one, David says, I see far beyond a little 9-foot man and a little 18-pound spear. And I'm looking far, far beyond that. I have been with the sheep long enough. I have heard my father's voice long enough. I have looked at the eternal long enough that a little 9-foot man is small. It's not him against me, David's saying. It's him against God. And all of a sudden, that makes all the difference. And if you and I can grasp that also, it's not me and the things I want and what's going to be nice with me. It's me and what this living God of the universe wants. And that makes a huge difference. Your Goliath, you're dying to whatever you need to die to. You're taking up your cross. You're making daily decisions in life that are Goliath. Can be very small when seen in the light of the eternal. I know what it's like, and forgive me, I'm not just preaching at you. I know what it's like to see as Saul did. God, it's big. I don't know how to deal with it. Ouch, it hurts. I don't want to die to that. Ouch, do I have to do that? Do I this? Do I that? Mickey, you're looking at it wrong. Take Moses' concept and see him who is invisible. And it revolutionizes the way life looks. All of a sudden, you have a Saul perspective or a David perspective. Young people, we won't have a David perspective. It's that simple. Right? We won't have a David perspective. If, I like this little quote, I don't know, it's not Bible, so you can question it if you want to. But I like it. I think it makes us think. If your life makes sense to the world, probably something's wrong. If the people who look like this at your life and my life, and they say, oh, wow, that makes sense. The decisions we make, the way we live, the way we do business, the way we whatever. And if they look at it and it makes sense, I just wonder if maybe something's wrong. Because an eternal vision comes out in life quite different than a temporal vision. Another illustration, probably just one more here. Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16. We have another glimpse into the eternal. We have a little snapshot that gives us a peek beyond the veil into an eternal perspective. Verse 19 of chapter 16 of Luke. There was a certain rich man which was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. We got the picture? What are we looking at? Seen or unseen here? Seen. Just like God painted a picture of Goliath, now he's painting another picture. This time, it's a rich man, clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. He just had it. If he wanted this, he could have it. If he wanted that kind of clothes, he had it. If he wanted this kind of food, he had it. If he wanted to go here today, he could. If he wanted to go to this entertainment, he did. He just had it. Fared sumptuously. And there was a beggar. A beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at his gate, full of sores, and desiring to be fed with crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. Two very different people. Right? And if we look at them like this, from the temporal perspective, we're going to feel very, very sorry for this poor man. And we might deal with envy for the rich man. Right? If we look at it like this, from the temporal. We're going to say, well, he has it. He has the vehicles he wants. He has the business he wants. He has the clothes he wants. He has the money he wants. He has all the niceties and everything he could want, and it's all there. And here's this poor fella. You all know what happens, but just keep going here. And it came to pass that the beggar died and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom.
The rich man also died and was buried. And in hell he lifted up his eyes, being in torment, seeth Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. All of a sudden the tides have turned now as we take a peek and God is pulling back the doorway for He's doing it, okay? He's letting us to have a little bit of what John saw. And He's pulling back the temporal, letting us look into the eternal just a little bit. And He says, look, this man in hell lifted up his eyes in torment. And he cried, saying, Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water. Like this. He didn't even ask for a cup. Just the tip. He was in agony. And cool my tongue, for I'm tormented in this flame. This here is a cry from eternity, from the eternal. That's what it is. Resounding, God pulls back the curtain and sends forth a little cry that comes leaping out of eternity into our everyday life. And it's saying, listen, just the tip of your finger. That's it. As all He asked. Abraham said, son, remember that thou in thy lifetime receivest thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted and thou art tormented. And beside all this, between us and you, there's a gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us that would come from thence. And he said, I pray thee therefore, Father, that thou wouldest send him to my father's house. Okay, so here he is tormented. Okay, please, I'm in eternity. That's the picture we have. I've passed beyond the temporal. And I'm here, please then, if you won't at least help me, send Lazarus or someone back to my father's house and tell my brothers, change something, you're looking at things wrong. And can I plead with you, if you are making decisions like this, please, you're looking at things wrong. This rich man is crying out from the eternal to you and saying, please, send someone to tell him. I have five brethren that he may testify unto them, lest they also come to this place of torment. They're looking at it wrong. And Abraham said unto him, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. And he said, nay, Father Abraham, but if one went unto them from the dead, they'll repent. And he said unto him, if they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead. And that was a prophecy, right? Neither would they be persuaded. And God is saying to you and to me, Mickey, are you going to look at this? Are you going to look at this? I'm giving you a peek beyond the veil. And there's a cry coming from the eternal side of this earthly veil that's blocking between you and the eternal, between the seen and the unseen. And I'm pulling it back and I'm saying, do you want a little peek at what it looks like in eternity? Here it is. Father Abraham! That's what it looks like. And I don't necessarily mean that as some fear. Actually, it should settle a little fear on our hearts. And maybe I do mean it that way. It should settle a little fear on our hearts. Where are you at, Mickey? Where are you at, my dear brother, sister? As you look at your future, which way are you looking at it? What is more important to you? Just as a foundational principle, as you're going to look at various things, preparing for your future, which one is the one that influences, motivates, has the greatest impact on your decisions? Which one? After this, most of us are going to say, we want the eternal, right? After looking squarely at some of these principles, we're going to say that. I'm saying that. And I'm glad many of you are saying that. Let's do that. As you continue on in life and make decisions and thought patterns and habits and desires, step back, pull back the veil, by faith, gaze at the unseen realities. They actually matter more and are more of more value than the seen. We all know that. But when I hit the decisions in my life and the things that I need to do, do I know that? Am I living that? I want to. And I know many of your hearts, you want to too. Let's do it. Let's live according to the unseen. As you listen even to the rest of the week, and I don't get to be here with you, and I'm kind of sad about that, but I think it's best for me. It's what I should be doing. Do you know why? I think I'm making that decision for the sake of the eternal. I'm trying. That might be some of why I'm not here. Maybe that sounds funny. You can ask my personal questions if you want later on why. But I think it's what I'm supposed to do for the eternal, for eternity of me, my family, my children, the church. I think that's best for me. Can I be a little encourager along the way and say, let's do it. Let's make our decisions according to the eternal, not the temporal. As you face the myriad of them, and as you live the everyday life, let's step back, pull back the veil, take away the seen, and say, what does it look like in the unseen to him that sitteth upon the throne, that liveth forever and ever? What does it look like to him? Let's pray. Father, thank you for your word, that it gives us a little glimpse beyond the seen to the unseen. Would you help us live with those realities in place? Would you help me, Father? Help me. God, you know I need you. I'm weak. I don't always make the right decisions. I don't always go the right way. And I need you, Father. Thank you for reminding me of this. And I pray for these dear, dear young people here. Bless my brothers and my sisters sitting here as they live their life. Help them to do it in the light of the Eternal One. You sitting upon your throne, high and lifted up, as Isaiah said. We love you. We want to follow. We want to learn. We want to live this way, Father. So help us, is our prayer. Thank you for your patience also, Lord. You give us very, very clear things in your word, and then you're so patient with me. Thank you, and thank you for your kindness and patience to these dear young people also. Father, we want to be faithful, so help us that the light afflictions wouldn't bother us. We would see the unseen.